From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell in New York, where it's always good to have my old friend, Oscar-nominated writer-director Dee Reese, whose new film is an adaptation of Joan Didion's The Last Thing You Want. First of all, good to have you back here.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And I guess when I saw it, that you were doing this, I thought that it dovetailed neatly into so much of what you do, which is that all your films have been about emotional violence, intimate violence, that ends up spiraling outside the house. And this was kind of the perfect sort of intersection of those two things, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's like someone who isn't quite, you know, addressing that kind of like feeling of like abandonment or that feeling of trauma. And has kind of like, she's kind of scabbed over. And so you're kind of being this like scabbed over person that doesn't even remember like why she's sore.
Weirdly, in real terms, it could be your protagonist from Pariah 15 years later. Okay, first of all, before we get any further with this, you should tell people what this is about in case they haven't read the book.
Yeah. So the protagonist is called Elena McMahon, and it's about this kind of D.C. journalist, kind of hardened, you know, interested in Central America reporter. And she
Say it takes place in the early 80s.
So it takes place in the 80s. So it's like the Iran-Contra scandals, like the wallpaper of kind of like the moment. And so it's about her, you know, kind of dealing with her father's issues, and it's about her investigating this case, and like she thinks, you know, it's like she enters into it for like the wrong reasons, like which is to kind of like vindicate him, and then she kind of stays in it for selfish reasons. And it's about how she kind of repeats like the same cycle of like neglect that her father, you know, kind of committed with her. And you know,
she's, and we see it happening with her own daughter as well in this
exactly
thing.
Yeah, so like, you know, like in an early scene, like, you know, Dick McMahon, who's her dad, played by Willem Dafoe, asks about, you know, like, where's your daughter, you got her like locked up somewhere, and she's like, no, she's in boarding school. So it's like this kind of like justified, formalized abandonment in a way. And so we kind of see Elena wrestling with that. And like, I think the big struggle for her is like how not to walk away. And so we watch her in the whole film. And if she, and if this was the protagonist from, if this was Alike 15 years later, I'd say Alike had the better dad, you know? So
she did, but
she might not end up so dire. Yeah.
But she tended to ignore things that is, because your protagonist often, be it Bessie or protagonist in Mudbound or here, tend to be people who are observers in their own life rather than participating in a way, and that ends up precipitating a lot of these things that go wrong for them because they're watching. And to choose somebody whose career is to be watchful, I thought was a really interesting choice for you, and I wonder what motivated that.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to look at what happens when someone's kind of their peripheral vision like starts to gradually like shut down. Like how she goes from like knowing, and she kind of like Elena kind of understands the right thing to do. She kind of understands what's going on, and then like over the course of the film, she doesn't want to believe her father's involvement, and so that shuts down her vision a little bit more. And then she doesn't want to believe that, you know, she can't think her way out of it, so her vision like shuts down more. So it's like, you know, I mean, if you watch the film, it's like the moment she gets off the plane and the dog explodes, like, you know, get back on the plane, like money or no, get back on the plane. And so Elena like willfully kind of shuts down her vision and like, you know, pretends like not to know, and you know, we see where that leads her. And so by the end of the film, she's completely like myopic. It's like a tunnel, and she's only processing like what's right in front of her.
And the color scheme changes by the end of the movie too, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. It's like it starts very super warm, you know, and like we did like a lot of like yellows and the greens, and even like in like the plane, like the kind of like the descent is kind of like the warmest moment where she's on the plane. It's literally like red hot, and then when she arrives in Nicaragua, you know, the palette kind of becomes a little grayer, a little cooler. So you know, we kind of see that kind of like progression, and you know, the intensity, the pressure for her to go, the plane's the highest moment when she's on the plane, she's doing it, and then it's like relieved. And so in a way, you know, Elena has many moments to kind of walk away, many moments to choose freedom, but she keeps choosing to go deeper. So it's like almost like a self-destructive, I think, kind of latent self-destructive kind of thing happening.
But that moment we're talking about, which is kind of a climax, but there's still like an hour of the film left, is a moment that happens a lot with the characters who seem to be smarter than they are, but and in intellectual terms have a lot of resources, but in emotional terms don't know how to harness that intelligence to serve them in a better way and ignore the things they shouldn't be ignoring.
Yeah, I think, like, yeah, you know, it reminds me, like, my mom used to always say, like, if you know better, do better, you know? And so, like, every time you don't do that, you know, things end up worse. And so, like, Elena, like, knows better, but choice after choice, she doesn't do better. And even like early in the film, like she tries to walk away from this a couple times. Like she almost doesn't go down to see her dad. And then, you know, that whole sequence, like one of my favorite moments is her like looking at his home and coming to grips with this is who he is. He's not the suave guy at the bar. He's like, you know, this guy who's falling apart a little bit, you know, in like the messy house. And, you know, she thinks, okay, I'm just gonna bring his stuff home. And it's like, okay, I'm just gonna wash the dishes. And it's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna straighten things up. And next thing you know, she's on a plane. She's like, I'm just going to meet this guy. But everything kind of devolves. And there's nobody who's really like a reliable narrator, because Dick himself, like, we don't know if he's delusional or if he's like remembering something from before or if he's like in the moment. And so,
yeah. It's funny because I guess I thought the difference between the two of them is he seems to be, he's mired in the past and she's trying to look to the future, but neither one sees the present in front of them.
Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. Yeah, like neither one of them is fully like in the now. Yeah, and both of them are deluding themselves in a way, because Elena is deluding herself that things can be like they were. She can get back and it's going to, you know, he'll be the same dad that he always was. And I think he's deluding himself that, oh, it's this one last heist. And we always know in like heist movies, it's never going to be like the one last heist. You know, it's never going to work.
But I guess I was thinking about that too, just because I found myself in the watching of it thinking that, again, like we've done with characters before, they can exercise common sense about other people's lives and be incredibly judgmental. About, and we see that when she gets in arguments with editors. And, you know, you're not an editorial writer. You're...
the number is the fact. Just give me the charts. Give me the things. Yeah. No, it's like she's someone who I think starts out with like a big picture view. Like she starts out and can see like the wide shot. And then just over the course of time, she can only see like the close. Like she becomes emotionally involved in the story. And I think more and more she stays enmeshed in it because it's about her, like not walking away from her life, like stuff that's not in the film that was in the book, but, you know, she's like a divorcee. She's, you know, finished cancer, which, you know, we do reveal at the end.
Yeah.
But like, you know, this is
but it's not an ongoing thing in that. I mean, you say it for like a something that actually kind of explains a lot of her behavior.
Yeah, we like hint at it. She's kind of like a little fatalistic in a way, you know, and so this is a person who has a history of walking away from things. And so she's at a point where, like, she's deciding not to walk away anymore, to lean into the thing, to run into the storm, you know, even though she knows it's not the right choice to make, you know, but almost like running into the storm. I think maybe she romanticizes, you know, an ending, you know, and her death is then very romantic in a way. So yeah.
It is, by the way, that's the treatment with our old friend Dee Reese as co-writer-director, the adaptation of The Last Thing He Wanted. And I guess I found myself thinking, too, that you make it feel a lot more immediate than it does in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the book is a much more ruminative thing. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about that choice. Throughout the entire thing, things are constantly being thrown at her, and that's a departure from the prose of the book. And I wonder where that came from.
Partly, yeah. So Bobby Bukowski's our DP, and, you know, to make it feel immediate, we wanted to use a lot of continuous kind of breathless camera moves, you know. So I wanted to, like, not cut so much. So it's a lot of Steadicam work. So this great Steadicam operator, so we're chasing her, we're swirling around her. So it's a lot of, like, continuous shots that feel like they don't end, like they don't let you go, you know. And so, like, Elena, we feel like you come into a moment, you think you're going to have relief, you think you're going to have a break, but you don't. You're forced to stay in that moment and kind of move at the speed of life. And so I think the camera language really helped to serve that kind of immediacy and that kind of like can't get outness of it. And then, you know, and then we break it, you know, at the end when she ends up with Treat, then we start to have like more cuts and we start to get wide again, because it's almost like as the end approaches, things become clearer or things become easier. She has more like freedom. Whereas the first half, it's like all these moves where we're chasing her, we're leading her, we're circling her, we're never like letting her like out of it. She's kind of like mired in it. So
it's also becomes this really interesting way. You talked about her peripheral vision, and the first third of the movie is about peripheral because she's constantly spinning around, and her head's on a swivel in this movie almost literally, because so many times it's because her life's at risk and she has to be that. But I was thinking about that scene when she goes out on the pier and suddenly she's not doing that anymore, and that seems to be the moment for me where in real terms, she's doomed because she can't do that anymore.
She calcifies,
Yeah.
She has the scarf. She has the sunglasses. She's becoming rigid. She's like playing a role. She's wearing her like mother's dress. You know, that's the kind of thing like underneath it. She's put on like this dead woman's clothes and is now kind of acting out this scenario, which she knows is going to lead nowhere good.
But you often use movement to inform where characters live. Mm-hmm. And here it's really that. I mean, in a lot of ways, you staged the first third of the movie like an action movie.
Yeah. I really wanted to move. I wanted to like throw us in. And I wanted to be like those old like 70s movies where the character doesn't know, we don't know, we're running to keep up, you know? And so we literally feel like we're looking around. Who's that? What did he say? You know, I want you to be thinking like, what do I need to know? Like, what's important? And so, you know, in the editing, that was the challenge, like trying to figure out what the audience needed to know versus what they did need to know, and then how to just have this, to just like kind of shoot us out of a cannon. So there's this propulsion, there's this momentum that feels unstoppable. So we feel like we're being pushed through space like Elena is. And so we're keeping up, and then things don't slow down until after she gets on the plane and lands. And it's like, oh, wow, I'm here, you know? And then we as an audience logically can be like, go back, go back, go back. But Elena feels, you know, with bravado, like, oh, no, I'm here. I can handle it. You know, I'm ahead of it. And she's exactly not. And in a way, like the brown people in the story keep trying to tell her, you don't know, like Jones in the truck, like, maybe we should stop. Let's take a break. But because she doesn't have vision, she can only see him as like a hired thug. She can't even like imagine that this guy is not who he seems to be, you know.
But that's what I was saying about her judgment. And that's when her judgment disappears. Yeah. Because had she been back in Washington someplace, she would have been able to see things clearer than she does. And it's even in sound terms is interesting, because in the first third of the movie she's spinning around, we're only hearing bits and pieces of conversation, things going on, but she has to assess immediately. And when she goes down and she's talking to people and listening, her ability to read a situation, even though she's getting more information, completely disappears.
Yeah, she starts doing like a surface read. And even when you have Alma, who's like the wise, you know, like Alma keeps like the long view, telling her,
I'm giving
this name doesn't make sense. Like, are you sure it's right? Like, you know, it's like she's dismissive, you know, like, oh, no. I know my dad knows, you know. And so like it's kind of set up where at each point, like there's a person of color telling her, you don't know what you're doing. You didn't know the thing. And she's like, oh, no, I know. My dad knows.
And they're
knows
giving you the information in real time.
Yeah, exactly.
That she's choosing not to listen to.
Yeah. I was afraid it was going to be too, like, obvious, because to me, they're telling you, you know, they're doing, like, recaps. When she lies in post-relief, she, like, almost, like, recapping. Wait, you're where? How'd you get there? Listen, this stuff isn't checking out, you know? So,
It kind of plays for laughs, just because it's almost like, not almost like, it's and it's the thing you do hear that makes a difference from the book. It's the industrialized world's superiority. Mm-hmm. It envelops her because she's not the person she was at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And so she kind of falls into this superiority that really, she loses the kind of instincts that kept her alive before.
Yeah, and if you asked Elena, like, do you have, like, a racial blind spot? She'd be like, absolutely not. My best friend's Latina, you know, but, you know, absolutely, like, she does, because she's not able to hear and listen. And even, like, toward the end of the film, we're almost saying, listen, there's a French operative there. You know, Elena just, like, blows right through that, like, oh, they're moving faster. She doesn't even, like, hear that. But if she's in the car, she would have heard him, like, curse in French. So it's like, it was all there, but her own blind spot is not allowing her to, like, see Jones for who he is, to hear Alma kind of, like, you know, waving the red flag, you know, she's not able to, like, slow down. Like, this kind of idea of I know best kind of starts to speed her up again and propel her kind of past kind of, like, reason. And the one moment I like before she completely cracks is when, you know, she's run away from Jones and she's with her daughter, kind of giving, like, these last instructions, like, your dad's going to come get you. And so it's this shot where, she's just, like, out of focus because it's, like, her, like, mind state. And we stay there and it's kind of distorting. And then the knock, like, wakes her up and the camera, like, wakes up, you know. So it's like she almost put it together and then got knocked out of it. So
I guess I find it fascinating, too, because one of the things that I think makes it distinct from the book is we really see her start to listen to her father. And as you were saying before, she starts to question, but then she goes for it. And that's what ends up costing her. I mean, not listening to the people she knows to listen to. She gets pulled into the wrong thing because it's how family can doom us sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah, which is always a theme in the work. Yeah,
it is.
I'm
that.
Always in therapy. Yeah, and what I love about Marco Villalobos, my co-writer, and like his take on it, like the characters he created, like Alma, is not even really a character in the book. Is not a character in the book. He's like is like an invented character who like gives her that kind of ballast. And then Jones is like one sentence toward the end of the book. He's like a figure on the bluff. And then Jones, we made him.
I gotta ask you a whole extra. We'll come back for more therapy. Our guest is Dee Reese, her new film is by a director. It's always great to have her here. It's the last thing he wanted. It's the treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing.
Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Racing with Dee Reeves. It's the treatment. Her new film is by a director is The Last Thing You Wanted. But you give it this velocity. Again, that is, the book is a really a contemplative thing. Mm-hmm. And but you saw something in that that made you want to like make it, to shackle it to basically a downward spiral.
Yeah, the thing I loved about Didion's book was like everything is so internal, which is like another thing I always like working with. Like with Bessie, I love like the internal churn. And so the thing I loved about this book was this kind of internal kind of like thinking, rethinking. And in the book, you're getting clues, like not in sequence, out of order. You're learning about her as she's going. And with this, I wanted her to have like a darker end. I wanted her to have like some kind of trajectory, like a point where she thinks she's going to, but it's not. And then we see her kind of going in circles round and round. And there are ways we try to like do that, like with the camera work, like with the focus on her and with the way we let it sit. Or sometimes, you know, as you said, she would slow down and start to become more kind of like calcified and like unhinged in a way. And then, yeah, I was saying like my co-writer, like Marco Villalobos, really took the reins and like really just kind of like added characters that kind of tried to give Elena ballast in Jones, in Alma, and tried to serve as counterpoint. So you can see just how off course she is in a way by the people who are around her, like pointing toward the shore, you know? So
yeah. I think what you guys have been doing there is really giving a sense of place there that if she'd opened her eyes, she wouldn't be as disoriented as she is, but she's completely dislocated when she arrives there. Because again, I keep thinking about that scene. She's on the dock and she's no longer looking around. I just thought that was a really interesting.
Yeah.
It's a, for sure, it's just a static shot.
Yeah.
People coming into her rather than her looking around. And I just thought.
Yeah.
You really sort of signaled that in visual terms that she was over and done with.
Yeah, I like working with like body language a lot, you know, like performances and like how people feel. And Anne and I found this nice thing where, you know,
Anne
because
Hathaway,
she so Anne Hathaway the star, and so because she has this breast cancer scar that the audience doesn't like know about. So it was a thing when Elena became tense, she would kind of like tighten up on that side or where the scar tissue is, you know. And so that became a nice kind of signal or like a barometer for Elena's kind of internal weather in a way. And so, you know, she becomes a little tighter and tighter as she goes. And then, you know, just in terms of atmosphere, when we get to Antigua, I wanted to make it very clear that, like, her problems didn't become, like, the black people's problems, you know? So she's on this beautiful beach. People are catching fish, eating mangoes, listening to the radio. She's freaking out. But like counter to the typical thrill, like her emergency doesn't become like the universe's emergency.
And if life is going on without her.
Yeah, exactly. If she would just stop and chill, she'd be okay. If she'd just hung out and just like trusted, you know, kind of her instincts.
It almost feels like when it's quiet, mm-hmm. she loses her bearings.
Yeah. I think that's a read. That's a read. It's like, I feel like she came close and then she revs herself up like the moment she's like in the water, kind of that's her first moment to really mourn the death of her father. You know, that moment of mourning kind of slows her down. But then like right away, she's trying to control the situation. She's calling Alma, okay, here's what's happening. And Alma's like, oh yeah, yeah, we know about that. You know, and then they put together that, you know, is maybe already happening. But she doesn't slow down enough. She starts revving herself up where she can't hear Alma basically give her like deliverance and tell her, there's a guy there who can help you. And by the way, you're with him like right now. She like runs from him, you know? So I think, yeah, I guess there's something to that. She's not comfortable in stillness, but those moments are the ones that are peaceful and that demonstrate the world around her is not in chaos. It's all internal.
Because I guess I was thinking too that we can really feel her anxiety all the time. And that's the one thing it seems like you brought from the Didion, that sense of almost a vibrancy going mm-hmm. on that she doesn't know what to do with herself. And even when she's kind of standing still, we can still feel it.
The thrum, yeah. It's like this tension. It's like the scar tissue tightening. It's like the thrum. Yeah, I wanted to like kind of have that. And sometimes you can deal with, you know, with the camera language, sometimes in the last third of the film, you could demonstrate that by being super still and to where she's just kind of like caught, you know, in the lens and like vibrating versus us like propulsing like with her, like shooting her out of a cannon. So yeah, just play with like different things like that to kind of like basically foreground Elena versus like the universe and kind of show the difference and kind of show how she becomes more and more kind of like out of tune with things. Then it's most beautiful before it's over, like when she goes to Paul Schuster. That's supposed to be the most gorgeous kind of set. She's in this beautiful paradisical place, you know, and this is the most dangerous person, you know, in a way. And so delivery is so. But when it was intense, when it was sweaty, when it was hot, that was actually like the safest place. That was like the safest group of people you could have been with, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, then there's that kind of contrast in the beginning to Antigua, where because you set the stage, or rather you set the movie up in terms of her knowing how to live in those places, mm-hmm. where there's political unrest, where there's institutional corruption, where you have to know the place before you go to it. And so you've set this thing into motion where when she gets down there, she should be able to figure things out, mm-hmm. especially because, in effect, her father's telling her that he can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's kind of discovering about herself that maybe she wasn't as equipped. Like, maybe it was fine under the backing of a news organization. Maybe it was fine, like, with her partner. But, like, you know, who knows how much Alma was, like, buffering or deflecting or making her feel safe, you know? But when it's by herself, it's not under the auspices of an organization, you know, how in tune she really is. Like, there's no one to translate for her in a way, right? There's no one to help her read. And in that, she misreads and goes to her instincts and kind of leans, you know, she goes to her dad, goes to treat, goes to the markers that aren't familiar to her versus, like, really kind of reviewing things, you know. Like, the guy who shaved you from machine gun fire is, like, not the guy you should run from, you know.
So, well, kind of neat lessons, like, you shouldn't gun butt the guy who's trying to drive you to safety. It's yeah. a treatment. I guess as writer-director Dee Reese, her new film is the adaptation of The Last Thing He Knew. I guess I want to know, what it was that made you want to do this?
It was the father-daughter relationship. I mean, that was, to me, like, the love story I saw, like, at the center. And it's about, like, the things you do for our fathers, you know? And in this case, you know, she, like, dies. So it's, like, this idea of wanting to save something kind of hidden in the context of, like, a political thriller. That was the thing that got me. Because the Elena Dick thing was what I was really excited about. Yeah,
yeah, you were?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was the thing of it for me. It was, like, a way to talk about a relationship, but then hide it in this other thing. And then on top of that, then you get the social value of, like, the whole kind of, like, American imperialism. So it's, like, how she was, like, you know, how her own father is participating in it in a way, but and how she's trying to, like, vindicate him, save him from that. But she herself, you know, believes, subscribes to kind of, like, the ideology in a way that she's not aware of.
It's interesting because I guess I was thinking when I saw the sort of thematic thing, we've talked about this here before because mm-hmm. you've been here for all your movies. Thank you yes. for doing that. Is how people are kind of lose their bearings around family. Mm-hmm. They aren't the person that you introduce us to, mm-hmm. the person who has some kind of self-possession, mm-hmm. who understands the world, who has a relationship with the world that may be kind of prickly, but they mm-hmm. know they are the world, and they kind of observe. And as soon as they're around family, the family's like kryptonite for them, and they're kind of, they lose their moorings. And I thought that maybe that was the thing that you were attracted by, because you build that into it much more than it is in the book.
Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. I think we're saying the same thing, like with the Dick relationship, the Elena Dick relationship, whether toxic or, like, you know, loving, it's like that was a thing of it, that Elena Dick thing.
Sure.
But thematically, this, you know, he is her, like, undoing in a way.
Sure,
so,
sure. But yeah. I thought it was interesting too, to cast Willem Dafoe as somebody who is not the sort of the rock, be it in heroic or evil terms. There's a kind of a surety of what you get from Willem Dafoe. Having be this guy who's completely unreliable.
Yeah, but it's great, though, because you don't see him, like, it's like you look at him and you see instantly, like, the dad he was, you know? He was, like, the exciting dad. He was the fun dad. He might not be there, but when he does show up, he shows up with, like, you know, steamed shrimp and, like, a whole feast at 3 a.m, and everyone comes out, you know, and, like, enjoys it. So it's like you see kind of all that history, you know? And then he's not the guy that you expect to lose it, you know? He seems like he's in control. Even he's playing a shell game, but you believe he's in control of the shell game kind of way. And so I think he was interesting because when we're playing, like, the dementia, it's like we're with her, like, we don't want to believe that he's not there. And he's constantly saying, I'm here, you know? And then in the next moment, oh, how's your mother? You know, and so then that prick keeps coming back.
Well, what was your first conversation with Anne Hathaway about this?
the first conversation about the whole film was just that I thought she was too nice, you know? And so I was just like, I just don't want it to be sweet, you know? And so, you know, she's convincing me that she wasn't sweet. And so we kind of talked about this transformation in which she became. And so I really literally wanted to like invert her, you know, instead of being very kind of fair skinned and dark hair, be like sunburned and like light hair.
She's constantly flushed.
Yeah, just completely transformed. And even like weight gains, like would she be down to gain? Because I wanted Elena to feel substantial, like every woman, you know, she's reported she's not eating great food. She's like, you know, not caring for herself. And she was game. So that was the first conversation about making this like not sweet. And like in general, like I didn't want it to be like the completely noble journalist. I wanted it to be like the flawed kind of journalist who's a little messy. And even that whole world is messy. Like when you're on that campaign plane, it's like, you know, toxic male energy. They're farting and shoving and like, you know, asking people like how they got there, you know? So I wanted it to be that kind of take on it where it's a little gritty. So you can see why she's exhilarated by it, like she is by her father, and you see why she loves it. But then you see why when she's not doing the things she wants to do with it, how it becomes abrasive, you know, and kind of drives her out.
I'm guessing one of the reasons you may want to do is because in political terms, it certainly fits into the world we're living in now, doesn't it?
Well, it's happening now. It's funny. As we're editing it, I kept thinking the film was going to age out. And it never like aged out of relevance. So every time I thought, okay, it's not going to be like relevant anymore, a new moment would come. And then I remember when like Falwell kind of like perked up like a couple months ago. It was like, oh my God, like he's in the movie. Like it's happening now. And also like some of the sound bites we found, like, you know, Falwell talking specifically about Nicaragua, you know? So it's like, boom, I got homophobia. I got Nicaragua and like immigration. And it's like, this is not a new conversation. And so this is a chance to kind of point to this all started, you know, back in the 80s. It started with Reaganomics, and we voted this in. We ushered this in. And so I kind of wanted to, like, I don't know, just drop a little marker, like, on the timeline. Like, it didn't start now. I want to move the marker back. Like, this is when it really started, and we were really excited about it.
Well, as Dick is talking about Reagan, he could be talking about Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And even like the whole bring America back, you know, like that was a slogan. It's like, again, like that wasn't new. So I just wanted to like put all those little like nods and nudges in and how it was a time where we were kind of blindly following and believing and wanting to believe like Elena and really investing in exactly kind of like the wrong kind of authority.
Well, I guess I find myself thinking that there's a lot of work in folding his misdeeds into her undoing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's literally the case here that, you know, what he has done. And there's a lot more of that, but you really sort of make him, I don't want to say the villain, but the force mm-hmm. that leads to her undoing. That's a lot more evident here than in the book. Because it's almost like she's caught in his tractor beam and she can't break out of it.
Yeah, I wanted it to be like, she knows the hook is in. So what does somebody do, like when they know the hook is in, but they think they can take it out at any minute, you know, like, do they go deeper? Because they think, oh, yeah, I know the hook is there, but I'm going to get out. Yeah, I'm going to get out. Yeah, I'm going to stop soon. And then they can't, you know? So that kind of idea, like, she's not completely unwitting in terms of, like, the emotional manipulation, you know? And, like, in the moment...
Well, she's complicit in it.
Really. Yeah. Yeah, it's like she's not going to do it, and then...
Because she knows the way he was with her mother.
Yeah.
She knows the way she is with her daughter.
Yeah.
And, again, because of her readings on world events at the time, so... precise, you really set up this thing that she should know better. You're telling us she's smart.
Yeah,
and Elena, she is capable of being observant.
Yeah, Elena like doubles down like on the shaky foundation. She says, not only, you know, am I smarter than this, but I'm going to use it to my own benefit. I'm going to get a scoop out of it, you know? So yeah. She literally like doubles down on it. Like, I take your house of cards and raise it two levels and it's still going to be fine. So there's kind of a hubris there in a way, I guess.
Definitely that. I'm sorry we're out of time. You got to make another movie so you can come back. You know you're always welcome here.
For sure. I'll be back. I got two of them.
My guess. Yes, maybe I'll hear about one day. My guess is writer-director Dee Reese. Her new film is The Last Thing He Wanted. I said The Last Thing He Knew. Forgive me.
It's okay.
I misspoke. Anyway, recording engineer, thank you, Paul. Paul West here at Argo Studios. The show is mixed and edited by Kat Yore. I'm Elvis Mitchell. This is The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.